what it seems. It's been very, everything has been well attended, yeah?
Yeah.
Do you know how many people, how many tickets
you
sold?
I have no idea, but I know whom to ask. Cordula would know it, Desiree would know it. In the opening, the auditorium
was packed. Yeah.
Quite good. Well filled, and this has
600 seats. I don't know.
600 or 700.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Okay.
is it mostly journalists? Do you think, or aid workers?
Students.
Everything.
Yeah. Herzlich willkommen zu unserer nächsten Sektion.
Okay, very warm welcome to our next section.
Mein Name ist Valentin Gröbner.
My name is Valentin Gröbner. And it's my pleasure and
unser Gespräch, was kostet erzählen zu moderieren. Es gibt gleichzeitig, Sie werden das gemerkt haben, eine Programmänderung. Dadurch, dass Marcel Mettelsiefen nicht ganz so zeitgerecht aus dem Irak zurückfliegen konnte, wie er gehofft hatte, haben wir das Gespräch zwischen ihm und Peter Geimer, das eigentlich gestern Nachmittag hätte stattfinden sollen, auf heute Nachmittag verlegt.
Haben
unsere Zeiteinteilung leicht verändert. Statt der 1,5 Stunden, die wir heute hier zur Verfügung gehabt hätten für Was kostet erzählen, dauert unser Gespräch hier nur eine Stunde und wird dann direkt gefolgt von dem Gespräch zwischen Marcel Mettelsiefen und Peter Geimer über Bilder und Gegenbilder. Das heißt, wir bleiben in gewisser Weise bei den Bildern. Den Bilder werden uns in dieser Gesprächsrunde hier auch sehr, sehr stark beschäftigen.
Keep us busy on this panel.
Aber wir wenden uns zuerst den ökonomischen Aspekten zu. Mir zur Linken sitzt Marcel Mettelsiefen, freier Fotojournalist und Filmemacher, Herausgeber der Zeitschrift Zenit. Die allermeisten von Ihnen werden wahrscheinlich in den deutschen Zeitschriften der letzten Jahre Fotos von Marcel Mettelsiefen schon gesehen haben. Zu meiner Rechten sitzt Michael Camber, der für die New York Times den Irakkrieg fotografiert hat. Und ein extrem beeindruckendes Buch herausgebracht hat im letzten Jahr, Photojournalists on War, mit Bildern und Texten aus dem Irakkrieg von 40 Fotografen. Ein Buch, das praktisch sofort auch auf Deutsch übersetzt und auf Deutsch herausgekommen ist im letzten Herbst. In einem Verlag, der den schönen Namen Herzblut Verlag hat, was ich sehr mochte.
Herzblut, you know, Heartblood.
Und schließlich Katrin Lemp, die Leiterin der Medien- und Öffentlichkeitsarbeit von Ärzte ohne Grenzen hier in Berlin. Worum soll es gehen? Bilder vom Krieg, Berichte vom Krieg unterscheiden sich aus dem Krieg, unterscheiden sich von allen anderen Nachrichten und an allen anderen Bildern, die wir in unterschiedlichen Nachrichtenformaten sehen, dadurch, dass sie, das bedeutet, was kostet erzählen, erst einmal unter den Bedingungen unmittelbarer physischer Gefährdung hergestellt werden für diejenigen, die diese Fotos schießen, diejenigen, die an diese Orte gehen, an die Front, in die Kriegsgebiete. Das ist natürlich etwas, was auf dem Foto nicht direkt zu sehen ist.
Da
kommen wir vielleicht, welche Art von Kosten man auf den Fotos sieht oder nicht sieht. Der zweite Punkt, der uns in der Vorbereitung bei Was kostet erzählen sehr intensiv beschäftigt hat, ist, Bilder sind natürlich der eingefangene Moment, sie sind Dokumentation, sie sind Zeugnis, sie sind Information, wenn Sie so wollen.
piece of information.
Aber sie sind natürlich gleichzeitig eine Ware.
But at the same time they also a good, they're a commodity and they come at
diese
a price.
Bilder, nicht einfach nur herzustellen, sondern auch
so there's a price not only for producing these pictures.
Sie sind die Lebensgrundlage für freie Fotografen, die diese Bilder herstellen. Und ich weiß nicht, wie viele von Ihnen in der direkt in unserem letzten Panel gewesen sind, aber da sagte Carol Bogart, eine ganz die Leiterin von Human Rights Watch, den Satz, dass es ohne Bilder nicht gehe, dass Bilder für sie so entscheidend sind, dass sie, um Aufmerksamkeit für eine bestimmte Krisenregion, für misshandelte Zivilbevölkerung herzustellen, dass die, ihre Organisation Human Rights Watch seit 3 Wochen einen besonderen, nur dafür abgestellten Fotografen zusammen mit dem Rechercheur vor Ort in der Zentralafrikanischen Republik positioniert hat. Und dann sagte sie, and this costs a lot of money.
And she said,
worauf
Caroline
Emke, sich daran erinnern, sofort danach gefragt hat, how much money.
Caroline Emke came in straight away and she said, how much money.
Das ist in gewisser Weise das, was uns hier interessiert.
So this is exactly what
Security,
is the topic
Sicherheit,
of today's discussion.
Physisch,
Security.
Das physische Risiko, so the unter dem diese Bilder
risk,
hergestellt werden,
on,
ist einerseits etwas,
risk,
wofür die Fotografen, die Berichterstatter selbst,
so
oft einen sehr hohen Preis zahlen, mit ihren eigenen Körpern, mit ihrer eigenen Unversehrtheit. Und gleichzeitig etwas, was die Herstellungsbedingungen
and at the same time,
unglaublich stark
this
prägt,
risk determines the production conditions of this of these pictures of this, because they are images
or
pictures of the world. So this is where
und
we're
deswegen,
coming from.
Ich habe eine ganz als jemand, der selbst als Historiker, das aus großer Entfernung
training.
Betrachtet,
habe
ich mir gedacht,
view.
Eine Frage, die mich interessiert.
Hence I came up with
mir
a
niemand
question,
beantworten kann, ist, was kostet eigentlich dieses besondere Kleidungsstück, an dem man einen Kriegsfotografen sofort als solchen erkennt?
What is, for instance, the price of a special garment, which clearly designates a war photographer, and it's not the camera, it's a bulletproof jacket. Mr. Mittelsiefer, what's the price of a bulletproof jacket?
Weil ich, wenn ich in solche Gebiete fahre, meistens das in Auftrag mache und dann wird mir all diese Sachen
gestellt. And, commission basis, and usually that my client provides this bulletproof jacket to me. But there are many freelance photographers and they need to pay for the entire apparatus, the entire logistics themselves.
That's
very expensive.
Es, wenn ich das mache, dann halt immer
to pay for the necessary gear. I decided that if I go there, I will only do it if I am commissioned, but I heard that it's about 1,200 and 1,500 euros to have a bulletproof jacket. And that definitely is not yet the most expensive.
Also gibt es teure und unterschiedlich teure. Also
so
es gibt sozusagen
expensive and expensive.
Ganz besonders exquisite, kugelsichere Westen und solche, an denen man erkennt, oh, der Mann hat die gebraucht auf eBay gekauft.
Used, bought used on eBay, bulletproof jackets.
Michael Kemper, Sie sind so lang und so intensiv im Irak, in als Fotograf für den New Yorker dort gewesen, erkennt man die Kollegen an den unterschiedlichen kugelsicheren Westen, die sie tragen?
Can you detect them by the different types of bulletproof jackets, or your colleagues?
I remember going years ago, going into Liberia, and they had given us this super thin, I mean, I don't think it would even have stopped, maybe a knife. And today with the IEDs and the you know, the much heavier explosives that we're encountering. You know, now we're getting things with ceramic plates, which are huge. You can barely move. They would cost $3,000 to $4,000 for the good ones. So it's changed considerably. I mean, for the top of the line. So, mm-hmm. But I think again, it, you know, the nature of the warfare has changed. When I started out 25 years ago, I mean, there have been a number of changes, but the actual combat has changed. insofar that we used to be able to, we were constantly running on the front lines with people back and forth firing guns, and the danger was to be hit by a single, an AK round, you know, from a Kalashnikov. And I think certainly covering Iraq and Afghanistan, the IEDs, the roadside bombs, are what cause the vast majority of the casualties. So you're basically, it's a different type of protection, than what we started out with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the role of the journalist, you know, has changed tremendously, but maybe we'll get to that in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm. Tragen die,
do they?
Die Mitarbeiter, also in der Kalkulation, in der Sie sind nicht die Finanzverantwortliche von Ärzte ohne Grenzen,
so you're not the financial CFO of Mitarbeiter von Ärzte ohne Grenzen, but in the raison d'être of NGOs spielen kugelsichere Westen eine Rolle. Other NGOs, bulletproof jackets, do they play a role? No, it's not. Well, we usually don't work with bulletproof jackets, usually, because our protection is a very different one. Our protection is the acceptance locally on the ground. As physicians, we provide humanitarian aid to the people who suffer from the consequences of war and violence. It's important, too, that we are perceived as neutral, impartial, neutral organization. That's our protection. And the medical aid we provide locally on the ground is the benchmark by which we are gauged. And it's very important that people understand that we are not, agreed with a political agenda, and that is a kind of protection. This is our bulletproof jacket. I mean, this is our goal. We need to create a grassroots acceptance, and this is why we don't work with bulletproof jackets and not with armed security personnel. But with photographers. Yes, with photographers, definitely. Let me just come in briefly. The same applies to us.
Eine schusssichere Weste ist natürlich jacket. Für die uns schicken, das, was man sagt, damit bist
I mean, if we sent this outline things, well, you're protected because you're wearing a bulletproof jacket, but even the best shield for the individual photographer who goes there locally on the ground is the confidence, the trust, the network which you gradually build up, and that is your shield and not a bulletproof jacket.
Mitarbeiter von MSF sehr MSF selten, wenn überhaupt, aus den einzelnen Lagern, wo sie stationiert sind,
usually don't move out of the out of the barracks or camps where they're deployed. And if they move out of their location, they move in tank or armored vehicles. And if we want to cover a story, we need to go locally on the ground. We need to speak to people in first hand. And there are certain situations where you have higher exposure than Médecins Sans Frontières. So it's a matter of common sense that you just put on the bulletproof jacket, but be all and end all is confidence that people perceive you as an impartial, apolitical, unarmed person. So this is where there's a parallel between us and the members of the international organizations.
Als Sie gesagt haben, die Westen
when
sind
you said
immer,
the bulletproof jackets
more sophisticated geworden,
became ever more sophisticated,
immer sicherer, immer massiver,
more secure, more massive,
fast nicht mehr darin bewegen
so that you
kann,
can hardly move anymore.
Ist mir natürlich als erste Reaktion
my
eingefallen,
knee-jerk response was,
die
that came to my mind.
Improvisierten Sprengsätze
oh, I automatically thought of those improvised detonations or explosives next to the roadside. They were never directed against press members of the press, but against regular military or military opponents.
Der Fotograf, der Berichterstatter, sich unter den Bedingungen des militärischen, nur unter den Bedingungen des militärischen Gegners bewegen kann, dann
can
kostet
only move
ihn das,
under the same conditions as military staff.
His
circle is limited. Is there any, are there any other options?
Well, I think, I mean, I had the good fortune to work for the New York Times, which had a huge budget in Baghdad, much larger than I think almost any other news organization. And we frequently would move in these beat up old sedans, just in plain clothes, with Iraqi drivers, no guns visible, no bulletproof vests. And the rule was we could never stay anywhere longer than maybe 15 minutes. You know, you had to get in and out quickly before people had time to sort of coordinate and figure out who you were, where you were. I would never speak. I mean, I would keep my camera out of sight until I had to take a picture. So that was one way to work. It was pretty nerve-wracking. The other way to work, which was also nerve-wracking, was to embed with the U.S. military. And those were your two options. And as it became more expensive, if you were a freelancer and you went to Baghdad, you had to have a driver, you had to have a car, you had to have probably security. I mean, you were talking maybe $1,000 a day or more. And the other, you know, what you could do for free, I mean, literally for free, if you would fly to Kuwait, the U.S. military would pick you up and they would embed you. They would give you a place to sleep. They would give you meals. They would take you around with them. And you could live for months without spending a dollar. And so freelancers began to do that because it was the only way that, you know, what was interesting, I'm speaking in particular about Iraq and Afghanistan, but as the wars, you know, basically ramped up, the U.S. media declined. So you had, you know, as the war got worse and it became more important to cover the war, U.S. newspapers began to go bankrupt. And, you know, U.S. news is gone. I could name a whole slew of American newspapers. I don't know about Europe so much. But so you know, there was tremendous amount of money available in the beginning for the invasion. It was like a huge party. I mean, it was obscene. People were, every journalist in America, and I think in Europe, was there. And they were spending all kinds of money, and they were rushing back to New York and writing books about their trip to Baghdad. And this was 30 days after, you know, we invaded Baghdad and declaring the war over. And of course, the war hadn't begun, so.
Das sind extrem hohe Beträge. Was macht
extremely steep amounts which you mentioned here. A freelance cinematographer and photographer, what do you do if you put it, if you're faced with that kind of bill? So there are travel agencies specialized in, you know, on war regions. One of those travel agencies is the U.S. Army.
Now,
what kind of travel agencies could you draw upon in your personal
film?
For instance, shooting films, I started doing that in Syria. And like in all other conflicts which I covered in over the past 14 years, there's a certain evolution, dynamism. The infrastructures emerge, networks emerge as a result of journalists traveling there. Just to give you a straight example, if you go somewhere, usually, if you work alone, usually you get teams traveling there. You have a fixer, somebody who's there locally on the ground and savvy and works as a translator, but he doesn't only work as a translator. So their key job is facilitating a network of trust, of confidence, building a network of trust and confidence, which is our bullet
problem.
So somebody who knows the language and
knows the ins and outs,
he's got contacts, he's got a network, and he is kind. He's a kind of vouchers for us, so we want to tell a story. And in order to be able to tell a story, you need to open the hearts and minds of people, you need to inspire trust. If you want to get something, you first of all need to give something. So, especially in the Arab Spring. The beginning was very difficult, and the more journalists went there, the more mature the network became. So usually it takes a lead time of 2 to 3 months. And usually it's the American news channels, news companies who start to pay major amounts, and this is when the circle is kind of, you know, perpetuated. People get used that they're being paid for a work which initially you may have been able to get for free. And to begin with, in Syria, I didn't pay a single dollar, and now the prices went up. If you go there, and if you go to Syria, you easily pay $400 for a single day, four fixers, $300 for a driver, $500 for a car.
Da kommen die $1,000
am Tag. We come to the $1,000 per day plus security. So $1,000 is even, you know, low budget. It's very high inflation. Freelance photographer, freelance cinematographer, basically, because you just can't afford it anymore. This is why Baghdad, for instance, doesn't get any news coverage anymore. It's no longer an issue. Logistically, it's become that difficult, so prohibitively expensive. So certain news are just, you know,
was für eine Organisation wie Ärzte ohne Grenzen, natürlich ein ernstes Problem.
This is a serious problem for Médecins Sans Frontières.
einem MSF? Anderen Aufmerksamkeitszyklus, die ja diesem Aufmerksamkeitszyklus nicht ohne weiteres unterworfen ist. Wie sehen da die Parameter aus? Denn ganz, wie gesagt, ganz ohne Fotos geht es ja nicht.
I mean, your work won't work without pictures.
Also wir arbeiten ja häufig schon in den Ländern,
usually we already work in countries where,
in denen die Menschen unter fürchterlichsten Bedingungen leben, aber where people live under atrocious conditions,
but which hardly get any media attention.
Und es kostet uns sehr viel Arbeit, sehr viel Beharrlichkeit,
we have to invest a lot of work
und wir sind natürlich auf der anderen Seite damit konfrontiert, dass wir immer wieder versuchen,
media attention for these issues.
Die Themen and anzubieten, Journalisten dafür zu gewinnen, in diese Länder zu fahren, speak to journalists,
making them go to these countries, covering these issues.
Von den Korrespondenten, von den freien Journalisten.
And then we get, and we're told by the journalists, by the freelance journalists.
Kann ich überhaupt nicht erklären. They tell us, well, sorry, MSF,
nobody wants to read about Congo. I would like to go and Central African Republic, forget it.
Okay, public stations.
This is what was told, what we were told by the public station or public network in Germany last August.
Ja, also nobody sind wir einfach damit konfrontiert, dass Auslandsredaktionen werden geschlossen, Korrespondentenstellen werden abgebaut, Medien geben immer weniger Geld für Auslandsberichterstattung aus.
Spending less budget und, on ja,
insofern werden wir dann häufig gefragt, können Sie nicht nochmal mit der Redaktion in Deutschland sprechen?
Oh, you get in touch
dann
with
können wir es von beiden Seiten probieren und vielleicht haben wir ja dann Erfolg, dass ich dieses two-tier Land approach
and then maybe I will be successful and will be will find somebody to foot the bill for me traveling to that. This is the downside, but on the other hand, if there's no images, in order to describe a certain issue, then
it's a
vicious circle. You don't get any news reports either. There was one situation which may be used as a graphic example.
Angola, 2002, end of civil war.
Savimbi was dead.
Da hatte Ärzte ohne Grenzen festgestellt,
MSF
dass etwa 500,000 Menschen, die jahrelang in den Wäldern gelebt hatten, vollkommen abgeschnitten waren von jeglicher Versorgung. Und wir haben wirklich wochenlang kind of versucht, Aufmerksamkeit dafür zu bekommen. Die UN hätten einfach ganz viel tun müssen, um diese Menschen zu helfen.
Do a lot in order to help these people who have been displaced and living in the forest. And we were told, as soon as you don't, as long as you can't give us any images, pictures, it's you know, not interesting. And then Salgado went there,
turned out,
and he made a major scoop, and Paris Dimanche, Guardian, and in the Deutsche Stern, German Time magazine. And suddenly there was media attention. We had the imagery, and suddenly it became an issue in the German public or in the public of the Western Hemisphere. But it took weeks and weeks to achieve this.
Also eine Frage der Ästhetik,
so it's a matter of aestheticism, is it?
Zuspitze.
Let me put this very heretically. No, it was a matter of aestheticism. Okay. Anyone does very special pictures. But at the end of the day, it depends on whether there are any kind of pictures at all.
In this case,
okay, it's somebody who does very high-end pictures, but it could have been anyone. Of course, his name definitely is a household brand. And, you know, everybody looks, you know, if the name Salgado is on there, everybody leaves through the German magazine straight away. No, your take on that.
Die verhält sich eigenartig zu dem, was Sie vorher erzählt haben. Den Krisenherd, die Aufmerksamkeit gibt es nicht ohne Bilder.
The hotspot is not,
aber wenn die Bilder da sind, verändern sich
attention without any images, but once the images are there, the production conditions
sehr,
for these images change very quickly, because observing the locus changes the locus. And the price of observing becomes very hefty, inflates for photography.
Is that is a dual economy of kind of attention, isn't it?
So media dependent subsistence on the one hand.
Sorry, I'm a little
vielleicht lange deutsche Sätze. Ja. Zu lange deutsche
Sorry,
Sätze.
Sorry, too long German sentences. Very complex. Sorry.
Also ich glaube, wir sind immer in diesem gleichen Abhängigkeitsverhältnis.
Well, we're always, you know, caught in that catch 22 situation as a freelance photographer.
In einem Spannungsfeld zwischen Auftragsarbeit und Feierarbeit.
You know, somehow you need to combine
innerhalb
commissioned work and freelance work.
Das ist ja ein Das ist eine ganze Industry, wie man
it's an industry.
Da gibt es Wettbewerbe, da gibt es Competition. Da gibt es bestimmte Preise, die man gewinnt.
Es gibt eigene Festivals.
You have your own festivals, dedicated festivals,
wo man Aufmerksamkeit erreichen kann durch Werke, die man übers Jahr hinweg produziert hat, die dann dazu hoffentlich führen werden, dass man gebucht wird für einen bestimmten Auftrag. Ein freier Fotograf, jemand, der anfangen will, sein Portfolio macht, versucht irgendwie strategisch muss dann überlegen, sind das die Themen, wo alle draufstehen,
gerade die Hot News
sind, wird er schaffen, in der Konkurrenz zu dem schon bestehenden Wahnsinn an Bildflut dort sich durchzuboxen, ist er so gut, oder sucht er sich die kleine Geschichte, wo niemand draufgekommen ist. In diesem Spannungsfeld ist man als Fotograf heutzutage, weil es so unendlich viele Fotografen
gibt.
Gleichzeitig, wenn man sich dann etwas überlegt, ich gehe in ein Land wie Afghanistan, in Irak oder jetzt in die arabische Welt, dann entsteht natürlich die Frage, wie kannst du dir das, wo ist das Verhältnis, eigene Risikoabwägung, wo setze ich mein eigenes Limit in diesem
kompetitiven Business?
Da entsteht natürlich eine Dynamik, weil man will ja besser sein als der andere, geht noch mehr dran.
You want to be better, you want to be closer.
And that entails more and more risks.
And also, when it comes to access, we have very good access in Syria and Libya. Very good young photographers were able to go to Egypt or Tunis or Hatay. 250 euros, the flight's cheap. And all of a sudden, you pay for a cheap flight and you're at the front. So it's not expensive, the war is quite close.
Und das ist eine sehr, sehr lange, und Michael Campbell war sehr involviert in dieser Debatte.
Michael, you were very much involved in the debate.
Ist die Verantwortung auch den Agenturen, den Magazinen, die solche Bilder ankaufen von Leuten, die es einfach mal versuchen, ein bisschen
what is the responsibility of the editors who buy the pictures?
Well, I think, you know, this is becoming more and more of the problem. These were jobs that were previously done with well-paid professionals who were trained, who had medical training, certain types of survival training, had the equipment that they needed. And when you start skimping on that, when you start saving money, what you're doing is you're increasing the danger in many instances. And I think a number of publications that what I was seeing, especially with the Arab Spring, is that rather than, again, you know, the Chicago Tribune just laid off their entire photo staff, you know, including 38 photographers, including Pulitzer Prize winners. I mean, basically what they're doing is they're buying photos from freelancers for $100. You're not paying insurance, you're not paying training, you're not paying pensions, you're not paying any of that anymore. And this is happening all over the U.S. And especially with the Arab Spring, I mean, there were publications that were buying photos from 18-year-old, 19-year-old kids, really. I mean, with no training. And you have no obligation to that person. You're basically giving them $100, you're getting a photo, and it's finished. And it saves you a tremendous amount of money. And the danger is just going through the roof. And this happened, we were speaking earlier about this guy in Syria. He was 18 years old. A major, Reuters was paying him, I believe, less than $100 a day. And he was killed there. And, he's filing pictures to them all day. From what I was told, he was filing pictures to them constantly. They're getting pictures to feed their wires, to feed their, to feed the news organizations. And they have almost no, he has minimal training, he has minimal equipment. And, this is really a shame. I mean, they would never treat an American like that, But they're treating, in my opinion, they would never treat an American like that. But yeah, they'll pick up a local staffer and they'll put his life at risk. And I'm horrified by it. And it's not just, I don't want to just single out Reuters, but other people are doing it.
Wenn das das Beispiel ist, ist das das Beispiel.
Well, if that's the example of Reuters, we have a clear-cut example. So somebody was killed, was shot dead, who was working for Reuters, and it's good to mention his name.
Aus geheimnisvollen Gründen hat keiner von den Verantwortlichen von deutschen Zeitungsredaktionen, die wir gerne auf diesem Podium dabei gehabt hätten, Zeit gehabt. Aber
wir haben das mehrfach versucht.
Weil ich hätte gerne, als Historiker wird man immer gefragt, stellt man sich irgendwann die Frage, was hat ein Text, ein Bericht aus der Vergangenheit, was hat das eigentlich gekostet?
Wieso
gibt es Schreiben ist sehr lange sehr teuer gewesen. Dokumente aus der Vergangenheit sind auch nicht selbstverständlich, sondern sind auch schon bezahlt worden. Und wenn man sich die ökonomische Seite der Kriegsberichterstattung ansieht, tauchen ja plötzlich solche Dinge auf, die mit dem Ausspielen von verschiedenen Fotografen untereinander zu tun haben.
This increasing competition and there's the question of labor law, such boring questions as insurance. How much does it cost to insure a war reporter who's going to the front and who provides such insurance?
How about Ärzte ohne Grenzen,
your researchers of Médecins Sans Frontières in the war areas.
Also haben die einen besonderen Versicherungsstatus?
Die gehen erheblich
höhere Risiken ein.
Because they run a much higher risk.
Versicherungsmathematisch ist das vermutlich
relevant. From the point of view of insurance, that should be relevant. I mean, we are not insured against this risk. Our security is the acceptance in the places we go to. Without this acceptance, we can't
work. Aber Ihre Mitarbeiter sind ja krankenversichert. Ja,
but your staff has health insurance. Yes, they do have health insurance.
But im Falle einer Entführung
of course, if you, there are also opportunities to get an insurance for the case of kidnapping.
Und das, dann muss ich aber noch mal klar machen auch, also wir haben keine Rechercheure vor Ort,
we do not have any researchers because we work medically on the ground.
And
it is our purpose to provide professional medical care. And as
Médecins
Sans Frontières, we also would like to report on the experience we have when working in those places. But that sometimes gets us into a dilemma because we have to work politically neutral in order to be accepted in the countries. And sometimes we have to
Und wenn es dann
push aside
Kosten
this principle of neutrality in very rare cases, when we talk about costs, the costs that we pay for are the costs that our patients should pay for. Because, I mean, as soon as we make something public, then we might have to leave the country because we will no longer get permission to work there. The government will send us out. Or our people would be in danger. And so we always weigh the pros and cons very carefully, whether we make something public or not. And once again, we are not a human rights organization with the primary objective to expose human rights violations.
So you are, in a way, innerhalb des Spektrums an NGOs auf der anderen Seite von Human Rights Watch.
You're sort of the opposite of Human Rights Watch. Yes.
Yeah, but the one dynamic that's changed so dramatically that I want to point out, and I you may disagree, but I feel like it applies to everybody, whether it's human rights, medical, journalist. When I started out again, going back quite a ways, I think that both sides in a conflict, or all sides in a conflict, had a story that they wanted to tell. They had a point of view, and they very much needed the journalist. They needed medical organizations to help rescue the civilians, who are, of course, are almost always the majority of people injured. But they had a story that they wanted to tell, and so they needed journalists in there. And that's changed in the last 10 years. That's changed so dramatically. The various actors, the various combatants now have the means to do their own propaganda and get their own information out. And sometimes it's very sophisticated. I mean, they have satellite dishes and sat phones and video crews and, you know, really, I mean, they're quite sophisticated. And now the last thing they want is an independent journalist who's going to contradict their story. And that has made it so much more dangerous. And I also think that, you know, certainly looking certainly Iraq, certainly Syria, Afghanistan to a lesser degree, Libya to some degree. You know, these things are breaking down into, you know, it's not the Cold War where it's, you know, Russians and Americans. It's so many different actors, and you've now got organized gangs of kidnappers everywhere. And I think everybody's at risk. I don't think that there's anybody now that's really off the table. I mean, friends of mine who've been to Syria recently say your chances of getting kidnapped are approaching 100%. I mean, they say if you're going to Syria, you will probably be kidnapped at this point. That's what I've been hearing from people who went recently.
Ein Teil der Ökonomie des Krieges geworden ist.
The economy of war.
Das ist ja das alte Business von Kidnapping.
That's the old business of
sehr
kidnapping.
Lange in der Geschichte des Kriegführens.
A very traditional business.
Wie gehen Sie damit um?
In times
jemand,
of war.
What do you think about that?
I mean, you're a filmmaker.
Dort unterwegs ist.
You've been traveling to those regions.
Well,
one day you just say that's the risk. And there is also a moment where you say, no, the risk is too high.
Kurzes Beispiel, how disastrous
the consequences can be when you get more and more dependent on the structures that you create yourself.
In September last year,
I worked on a film.
War zweimal drin in Aleppo.
Went to Aleppo twice.
Zwei weitere Male insgesamt viermal rein.
Musste
das leider abbrechen, weil ich einer meiner Fixer,
mit dem ich seit eineinhalb
Jahren arbeite, auch wieder ein Geheimnis für die Art und Weise, wie man sich sicher durchs Land bewegt, weil man immer mit den gleichen Leuten arbeitet.
Der
war der Einzige, der mittlerweile noch übrig war von den ganzen, weil die anderen beschlossen hatten, nicht mehr reinzugehen oder der Rest letztendlich gekidnappt war.
No longer went there. Ein anderer many Fixer, had been den ich sehr gut kannte,
der bei mir zu Hause in Berlin war, den ich vielen Kollegen vorgestellt hatte und,
wie man sagt, sehr gut im Business war, hatte plötzlich von einem Tag auf den anderen kein Einkommen mehr. Und war ein bisschen böse, oder
wollte letztendlich meinen Fixer aus dem Weg schaffen und hat uns auf eine Liste gesetzt.
Und hat gesagt,
was ein immens großes, die größte Gefahr ist, die man sich vorstellen kann. Und wir das mitbekommen haben, leider Gottes nicht drin waren und es fünf Tage gedauert hat, bis wir rauskamen.
Eine denkbar schreckliche Situation,
wenn man merkt, da fängt jemand an, Gerüchte zu streuen in einem Land, wo was so geflutet ist mit Gerüchten und Verschwörungstheorien. Der
saturated with conspiracy stories and rumors.
And he did it for an economic reason, because das Einkommen einfach he no longer had an income. Abgebrochen ist, weil die Flut an Journalisten
because there were no more journalists coming.
Bizarrer habe ich es noch nie gesehen.
I've never seen a more bizarre example.
Als Konsequenz für mein eigenes Leben,
for my own life. Really.
Habe ich erstmal gemerkt, was wir für eine Infrastruktur dort bauen.
I mean, we build an infrastructure every time we get out, go out there.
Organisationen,
organizations. What is their consequence of their work? Do they prolong the war? Do they make the war shorter? So it's a very difficult thing.
Bemerkung von Colette Breckmann auf dem Podium. Gestern über
yesterday,
die Grenzen des Erzählens,
when we talked about the limits of narration, said something important. Colette Breckmann is a Belgian expert on Africa, and she has written famous reports and books, and she said on our panel,
die NGOs sind jetzt eigentlich überall, auch als Nachrichtenproduzenten. Es gibt keine weißen Flecken mehr.
No
und mir
spots
schien,
anymore.
Dass sie das mit sehr skeptischen Untertönen gesagt hat. Das heißt,
die
Berichterstattung durch professionelle Journalisten, humanitären Organisationen und die Hilfsorganisationen sind auf die Arbeit von Journalisten angewiesen.
Is necessary for the humanitarian organization. So they depend on being covered by journalists. But there is also this feedback loop.
in die nicht intendierten Folgen ihrer eigenen erfolgreichen Arbeit.
Because they also face the consequences of their successful work and not always does this successful work generate positive consequences. So what is the conflict between humanitarian conflicts? There are people where we have no pictures. It's only the media who determine the narration of war. And only the media can tell us the dire situation that people are in. I mean, there's also something else.
There are less and less foreign correspondents who really know the countries well, who live in the country, have a lot of contacts, know the contexts. And so therefore, humanitarian organizations become more and more important as suppliers of information. Usually, that information was provided by others in the past. It's a very ambivalent situation for us, of course, because there's so many things we'd like to say, but we cannot always do it. It's not, and the things we can say is not always what the media wants.
For us, I can say we get asked very often to assess the political situation because we are the ones who work in the country over many years. We know the development of the context. And very often we are right in the middle of this conflict dilemma. And we are usually one of the last people who leave a zone of conflict in the Central African Republic. There are not many organizations left who still work there on a long-term basis. And so we get the questions about the political situation, what are the demands, what has to be done. And they want the information for free. Well, we tell them we are not the ones to answer these questions.
Wie ich vorhin sagte,
because as I said,
wir können über unsere Arbeit
we can
sprechen,
talk about our work,
wir können aber, keine politischen Forderungen
but we cannot make any political demands. That's not
tun.
Our role.
Und
it's up to others to do
da
that.
Gibt's dann Probleme.
And there,
gibt's aber
the problem
über das,
exists.
Was wir dann
but at the same time, the things we want to talk about and can
und die Situation der Menschen,
talk about, the consequences of violence and the situation of people, journalists are not interested
right.
in that.
But see, again, the lines are
I feel
blurring. No, go ahead.
No,
the lines are blurring, and because the media is spending less and less money, they're piggybacking on the work of the NGOs. I mean, 10, 15 years ago, we were the journalists over here, and we would sort of wave to the NGOs as we went by, We might go to their hospital once in a while to get a few pictures. But today, every journalist has a whole list of NGOs that they're trying to work with. You know, can you get me a plane ticket in? Can you get me a ride on a car? Because I can't get a newspaper to pay for it, So you have to finance your own trips. So we're constantly trying to piggyback to catch a free ride and to work with the NGOs. And so the lines are very much blurred, I think.
Und nicht nur das, sondern es ist letztendlich am Ende auch das gleiche Personal.
Weil well, that's not the only thing, but
es sind ja viele ehemalige Journalisten, die dann irgendwann bei der Vereinten Nation grandios bezahlte Jobs als Communications die sehr, sehr oben anfangen, witzigerweise, bei den Vereinten Nationen, die sind da gleich eines der bestbezahltesten Jobs, weil sie einfach die Wichtigkeit von gezielter Kommunikation ihrer Arbeit erkannt haben im Wettbewerb eines absolut kompetitiven Wettbewerb, wenn man das so innerhalb der humanitären und NGO-Welt ist ja genauso ein Wettbewerb wie bei uns, dass man da versucht, seine eigene Arbeit zu promoten. Uns Fotografen, Gott sei Dank, auch diese Infrastruktur bieten, die sehr, sehr teuer ist und dafür letztendlich aber die Bilder bekommt, die sie brauchen, um dann als das Ding am Laufen zu haben. Jetzt gerade ein Beispiel, was UNHCR hat gerade ein sehr spannendes Bild gezeigt, wie ein kleiner Junge die jordanische Grenze zu Fuß mit seinen zwei Plastiktüten überquert, weil er auf dem Weg seiner Eltern war und anscheinend von Syrien bis nach Jordanien zum Flüchtlingslamm gelaufen ist. Das ist ein Bild, wo man sagt, grandios platziert von UNHCR, die eine wirkliche UNHCR-TV-Sektion haben.
Vielleicht die englische Abkürzung für das Publikum gerade auflösen.
Well, let me just explain the acronym. UNHCR,
Hochkommissariat für die Flüchtlinge der Vereinten Nationen.
Die eine grandiose Arbeit tun.
Die haben einen eigenen
Fernsehsender. Die haben das World Food Program auch. Das haben sehr, sehr viele Organisationen der Vereinten Nationen. Haben hochqualifizierte Medienleute, die jetzt mit Bildern nicht handeln, sondern sie bereitwillig an Fernsehsendern, an Channel 4 zum Beispiel. Ich habe gestern mit jemandem die haben mir darüber erzählt, dass sie dieses Material ausgehändigt bekommen haben, um zu zeigen, das wurde überall schön platziert. Mit ihren UN, mit ihren Mitarbeitern in ihren blauen Westen. Ein wichtiges Bild, ein wichtiges Bild, aber da sieht man natürlich auch, dass das eine klare Bilder werden dort benötigt und werden auch
basically it's what they need. They need these images. Just goes to show they need the images.
Thema ist, aber wie ist die Konkurrenz zwischen Hilfsorganisationen und humanitären Organisationen? Jedes Jahr vor Weihnachten wohnen for good or bad in einem der reichsten Länder des Planeten, nämlich der Schweiz.
Und vor Weihnachten
in der Fastenzeit füllen sich die Plakatwände der Stadt, in der ich wohne,
mit humanitären, also mit Anzeigen von humanitären Organisationen. Das fängt mit den Kirchen an.
Da ist aber auch natürlich sind eine Reihe von anderen humanitären Organisationen, Ärzte ohne Grenzen und so weiter, auch dabei. Das heißt, wir haben deutlich auf den Plakaten rund um den Bahnhof Luzern eine Art internen Wettbewerb
zu ganz bestimmten Jahreszeiten.
Wer hat das anrührendste?
And they try to
ja,
have the most, you know, touching children pictures.
Ja,
I didn't want to put it this way.
Unterschiedliche Bildsujets, you know, zu reden. Da geht es um die Visualisierung imagery, ihrer Arbeit und
their work,
der Leistungen für
work,
die Menschen vor Ort.
Benefits which are delivered to the
was heißt
population.
Das? Das sind ja auch das sind Organisationen, mean? Die es in dieser Fülle all, und in dieser Finanzkraft am Ende der 1970er Jahre
at
noch nicht gegeben
1970s, there wasn't such
kann man so sagen, dass der lange Abstieg, der langsame
Decline
der Zeitungen, der großen bestimmter Nachrichtenformate und der Aufstieg der NGOs als Auftraggeber
NGOs
für Bilder
for, pictures, does it correlate? Is it interrelated? I don't know. Because we need images for two reasons, for two purposes. We need them for our in-house publication.
Mailings, Spendermagazine, Websites
und dann of course, in order to become attractive for donors and potential staff. But the second objective is acceptance and awareness for the context in which we are active.
I already mentioned it.
So we want to articulate our experience, make it public what we see locally there. And the third goal is what we call leverage, is communication with the purpose.
Möglicherweise
of creating awareness for certain contexts and you know, becoming the agents of political change
by
naming and shaming, by saying, by speaking about what we see. So these three goals are,
finde ich wichtig, voneinander zu trennen.
You know, are in parallel, and I think it's important to single these three prompt goals out. The cooperation with photographers, there are three options. Either the photographers are locally on the ground anyway, and as Michael pointed out,
vorbeikommen in einem Projekt,
they just drop by, come to the project and knock on our doors and ask, can we, you know, can we join you for a day and have a look at the project for a day?
Es gibt
option number two.
Wir sind die Einzigen, die Logistik bereitstellen können.
We're the only ones who can provide the logistics.
Auch,
if that is the case, we provide the photographers
ist,
with the necessary logistics.
Und wir sind aber die seltensten Fälle, wenn es keine Bilder gibt von Kontexten, für die wir aber Dringbilder brauchen, auch für unsere eigenen Kontexte,
certain scenarios for which we urgently need pictures for our own publications, then it is possible that we pay photographers to make pictures for our own publications, but the rights are stay with the photographers so they can also sell the pictures on.
You would like to come in or to come
Well,
in.
Yeah, I'm not against any of it. I mean, I think there's always been a symbiosis mm-hmm. and a working together. I'm not against any of it. I just think we have to not forget the larger picture, which is that news organizations, some of which are still hugely profitable. You know, I was just talking to a friend who works at NBC News. They're owned by Comcast. Comcast is involved in billion-dollar takeover deals. They just got a $50 million grant from a nonprofit foundation to cover poverty. Why a very profitable billion-dollar organization has to get a grant to cover poverty, which is their job, I don't understand. But I'm getting a little off topic.
No,
but
nein, hier geht's überhaupt nicht. No, you don't.
This is ridiculous. But you know, they're closing their bureaus all over the world. They're saving money left, right, and center. They're paying freelancers $100 whose lives they're putting at risk, you know? And then they're piggybacking on MSF or something to do their job for them. I think it's outrageous.
Das kostet erzählen, könnte man
That's
sagen.
The cost also, of narration.
Das Bild verändert
That's
sich einfach, wenn man über die ökonomische Seite
so
redet.
The picture changes completely when you talk about the economic side.
Möchten Sie
so
noch etwas dazu
points.
Sagen?
Anyway,
wir haben nur noch fünf Minuten und vielleicht
gibt es
hier eine der Möglichkeiten,
and now is your opportunity to put your questions to practitioners.
Fragen zu stellen. Vielleicht möchten haben von dem, was hier auf dem Podium gesagt worden ist,
anything that we said,
möchten Sie Dinge genauer wissen oder widersprechen?
Anything you would like to double check or do you take umbrage, whatever?
Es kommt ein Mikro.
Feel free, please use a microphone.
Ja. Also mich würde interessieren, inwiefern
I'd
auch Journalisten aus den Ländern selber davon profitieren.
In how far can journalists locally on the ground benefit from that, or will or is it always the case that international journalists are flown in?
It depends on the kind of context.
In the Arab Spring,
hat man jetzt angefangen, Leute zu auszubilden.
People started training people locally on the ground. There are lots of news organizations which have workshops in order to professionalize the civil journalists locally. On the ground.
Wo man sagt,
and this happens in many conflicts where people say, well, actually an independent eye is a bit more valid. For instance, in Syria or Libya, there were lots of social media imagery on YouTube where people said, well, you need to take these things with a pinch of salt. You can't really validate the source. I mean, somebody, an outsider, tends to be more impartial or neutral who comes in, and they should remain neutral. And apparently that has many years more valuable, but in the meantime it's become much more dangerous, and therefore many newsrooms, almost all newsrooms, bank upon local media activists for coverage. Sorry, comments of Mike can't be translated because the interpreter is sitting and sounding delayed.
Aber,
the answer is yes, there is such a thing. But unfortunately,
Arab context,
the readership of
an
Arab journalist is a different target group than the Western readership.
Aus der arabischen
but there are many voices from the Arab
die auch in westlichen
world
zu hören sind,
which
zu lesen sind.
Are also given a platform in Western publications. So.
Can I add to that? Yeah, that's good, great points. Again, my area of expertise is mostly Iraq, and I remember when the U.S. troops left Iraq, President Obama gave this speech talking about now they have a free press, and I mean, we just laughed because every single television station and every single newspaper in Iraq is owned by a political party. There is no independent media in Iraq. So, and I'm not attacking the journalists there. There are some amazing Iraqi journalists who are doing heroic work to try to get the story out. But the problem is that there are death squads. They know where you live. If you're an Iraqi journalist, you have no protection, you know. So, in theory, a Western journalist who comes in, I mean, it's a trade-off, you know, because the Western journalist frequently doesn't
understand the dynamics, doesn't, you know, have the experience sometimes, depending. I mean, there are, you know, there are journalists who, again, who used to spend 10 years in the Middle East and they really understood the region, but that's not happening so much anymore. It's frequently, you know, get a freelancer who will fly in for a week. So. Mm-hmm.
Aber danke für die Frage.
Right, thank you very much. It's a very good question, because it rounds off a picture which we otherwise wouldn't have had.
Dann bleibt mir nur Ihnen allen zu danken.
All that's left for me is thank all of you.
Und Ihnen zu danken.
And express my gratitude to you, the
audience,
for your kind attention.
Bleiben wir genau beim Thema. Sie haben vielleicht bemerkt, als wir bei den Kinderbildern waren, dass ich gesagt habe, können wir das einen Moment zurückstellen, denn
Marcel Mettensiefen bleibt bei mir auf dem Podium.
Wir holen jetzt unter Leicht
put this on a back burner for the time being, because we are now catching up with a discussion which was scheduled to take place yesterday
with
the photography specialist Jutta Geimer.
Über das, was man auf den Bildern sieht und was man nicht auf den Bildern sieht.
He's going to speak about what you can see, the overt and the covert messages on images.
Michael Kember, Katrin Nemp, vielen herzlichen Dank.
Katrin, thank you very, very much.